As we've seen, Blandin, deeply discouraged by the impossibility of making a profit from the manufacture of newsprint during the Depression years, had nonetheless kept his Grand Rapids mill open and running and avoided firings and layoffs even as other print mills went into receivership or suspended production or at the least cut way back on employee hours. The Blandin payroll spent in Grand Rapids sustained the business community, and the appreciative town was spared the grim Depression effects that had become so widespread. Elsewhere in Itasca County, the Depression brought its usual misery and despair. Bovee and Coleraine, just 6 miles away, felt its full impact as the market for iron ore ground to a halt. The logging industry sagged, and many farmers could not sustain their operations. Welfare costs that had always been high in Itasca County reached new heights, and taxes to support the increasing demands for help rose steadily. Taxpayers kept a wary and suspicious eye on those expenditures as the county attempted to meet its responsibility to its community. Let's take a look at the history of welfare in Grand Rapids and Itasca County up through the Depression years. It's the most interesting subject. A 1936 report on relief measures prepared by the Itasca County Relief Administration for the Minnesota State Emergency Relief Administration and a 65-page single-space history of Itasca relief measures and procedures written about 1940, no author given. Both documents held by the Itasca County Historical Society are excellent sources, along with articles from the Herald Review. The first public relief available in Grand Rapids and Itasca County was quite simply administered by the five county commissioners. In case of misfortune, sickness, crop failure, or unemployment, the commissioner of the district of residence was the person to see. He could dispense an immediate grant for groceries, for building materials, for medical or hospital aid, or even for temporary work, usually on a road project. The monies needed were available from county funds, and all the way until 1917, each commissioner held sole authority for disbursement of aid within his district. Grants were given upon only casual investigation of need and were dependent either upon the eloquence of the applicant or upon the whim or the generosity of individual commissioners. Needless to say, requests were more favorably viewed in election years. This system, or lack thereof, led to considerable disparity in the administration of relief. For example, from 1913 to 1916, more relief was granted in District 1 in the western part of the county than in the other four districts combined. In 1916, the Poor Fund was in the red, and the need for a better means of providing relief was evident. The county commissioners were in agreement that changes were in order, and they were aware that Itasca County required more in the way of relief funds than most other places in Minnesota. Many people had immigrated to the area with overly optimistic hopes of creating a new and independent lifestyle based on farming. And recall, we have looked in the past at those flamboyant ads that were bringing people up here with such unrealistic promises about coming and farming and in no time at all having your own place and independent living. However, well before land was cleared of trees and dug at stumps, or before the disadvantages of farming in a harsh climate had even been grasped, or even before just gaining first farming experience had been accomplished, family funds were gone, and help was needed. Also, the forests and lakes attracted what were described as a somewhat happy-go-lucky type of individual. And what that's referring to is that those who were trying to build the population figures in Itasca County were also appealing to those who would find a welcome to come and enjoy the invigorating climate, as it was usually described, and a life in the beautiful forest lands of northern Minnesota. When they arrived, they found that a life in the wilderness was not quite as romantic as had been expected. Ironically, in spite of the hardship suffered by many settlers, Grand Rapids and Itasca County boosters successfully sought to attract even more would-be farmers and happy-go-luckies. Seasonal layoffs in both the logging and mining industries also forced families to seek financial assistance. And still another factor was the high incident of accidents in the logging camps and even more so in the iron mines. In 1913, 265 injuries were reported from a group of 2,000 miners. Some of the laborers recently arriving in the United States and understanding little English, when seriously injured, casually signed away rights for long-term workman's compensation for a one-time payment of a few hundred dollars. Seemed like a lot, but it was quickly gone, and when it was, they were left destitute and without legal recourse. As the county commissioners faced numerous relief problems, they were also confronted with another related issue. In earlier logging days, various medical insurance plans had been available to the lumberjacks. Such plans never worked well because the loggers received very few benefits for their hospital tickets. Camp operators often found the jacks either not sick enough to be sent to the hospital or too sick to move. But nonetheless, residents of Itasca County were used to the idea of underwritten hospital care. As a result, the commissioners received frequent demands for county-backed health benefits. In 1916, local voters approved a $50,000 levy to establish the first county hospital in Minnesota. Immediately, questions were raised as to how it would be operated. The county attorney drafted a proposal to be submitted to the state legislature, which presented a plan to manage both the hospital and the distribution of aid to the poor. Duly approved by the legislature, an act created the Itasca County Board of Poor and Hospital Commissioners. The members were to be appointed, one from each county district, by the county commissioners. The new board was granted full authority to deal with questions of relief, and the county commissioners were finished with their role as direct dispensers of welfare. The newly appointed poor and hospital commissioners turned their attention to directing the construction and then the operation of the hospital, and they also assumed supervision of the county poor farm that had been established in 1896. However, the largest task they faced, and the one that occupied most of their time, was the granting of relief. Initially, the board members followed the procedures established previously by the county commissioners. Each member represented a county district and served as the investigator for assistance requests. Thus, still, no uniform or even fair system was in place. Disparity still existed. Each board member carried an order book and could provide aid in emergency situations. In other cases, the board as a whole considered an individual member's recommendation for approval or disapproval. Cases difficult to decide were numerous, but making even more difficult decisions came about because of another serious problem which the board faced. The experimental social program of Itasca County was soon at odds with the growing social consciousness of the state legislature. Of the 84 counties in Minnesota, only four had any sort of local agency similar to the Itasca Poor and Hospital Board. Thus, state law was drawn with the majority in mind, and resolutions concerning child welfare or county nurses or aid to the blind or feeble-minded or the deaf and dumb were regularly passed in St. Paul. While the Itasca Board was in sympathy with state goals, the local charter specifically stated that the Poor and Hospital Board had full, complete, and exclusive charge and control of the poor of the county and paying out and expending of monies for poor purposes in the county. State practices were soon in conflict with the county organization. For example, the State Board of Control was directed to care for defective, delinquent, dependent, and illegitimate children and adult defectives. Well, the State Board worked within the county legal system, and county monies were to be used for its support. In Itasca County, the needed money was to be drawn from funds now only supposed to be under the control of the Poor and Hospital Board. Still further, even though the county commissioners no longer dealt with questions of providing direct relief, they did still take measures such as sending patients to tubercular sanatoriums. The bills were then sent to the Poor and Hospital Board. Its commissioners refused to pay them. In 1925, the board asked the county to furnish a lawyer to aid in the numerous cases of conflict with state and county. Well, demand for relief aid was increasing in the 1920s. That, plus the problems associated with a multiplicity of agencies and the general inefficiency and lack of economy and administration, led the Poor and Hospital Commission to consider hiring a professional, experienced social worker. In April of 1926, after an extensive search and much correspondence, Lydia Buckness, a social investigator working in Philadelphia, was hired. Isn't that interesting? Turned to a woman in Philadelphia to come to the wilds of Itasca County and to bring some structure to this whole situation. Well, for the first time, Itasca County would enjoy the services of a welfare specialist who could add a degree of professionalism to the administration of relief. Yet, just 1 year later, when the first contract with Lydia Buckness had expired, the Poor and Hospital Commissioners, as noted in their minutes, decided to disperse with a welfare worker. The experiment had not worked, and the relationship between the commissioners and the professional appeared to have been disastrous. Well, what an interesting situation we have here. I certainly do wish that we knew more. I wonder why she wanted to come and what she thought when she arrived in Grand Rapids and what kind of a welcome she got. And most of all, was there friction immediately with the Board of Commissioners? What happened there? 1 short year and she was gone. The Philadelphia-oriented Buckness found in Itasca County a situation quite unlike what she was used to encountering. I'd like to know what happened to her. I'd like to know what she thought in later years about her whole experience here. But at any rate, nothing has been solved, and we're right back to where we were. As the 1920s drew to a close, the plans designed in Itasca County to make relief administration more practical and efficient were not fulfilled. As the Great Depression loomed, applicants for aid were ever more numerous, and the tax levy to provide funds ever increased. Public criticism of the county welfare program was sometimes sharp. Even so, tribute must be paid to the Poor and Hospital Board members. Not only did they receive no salary, they were not even eligible for remuneration for out-of-pocket expenses. Except for the 1 year with the professional welfare worker, they remained without investigators and were still responsible for checking and verification of mountains of claims. Next time, let's see what the next step's going to be. And we've also got to take a look at this poor farm. Not very good conditions there, as we'll see.